with the eyes or the motivation, and it was a moot point anyway. As it happens, I don't mind being alone with you. I know, he sighed, brooding. You should tell Charlie, though. Why in the world would I do that? His eyes were suddenly fierce. To give me some small incentive to bring you back. I gulped. But after a moment of thought, I was sure. I think I'll take my chances. He exhaled angrily and looked away. Let's talk about something else, I suggested. What do you want to talk about? He asked. He was still annoyed. I glanced around us, making sure we were well out of anyone's hearing. As I cast my eyes around the room, I caught the eyes of his sister Alice staring at me. The others were looking at Edward. I looked away swiftly back to him, and I asked the first thing that came to mind. Why did you go to that Goat Rocks place last weekend? To hunt? Charlie said it wasn't a good place to hike because of bears. He stared at me as if I was missing something very obvious. Bears? I gasped, and he smirked. You know, bears are not in season, I added sternly to hide my shock. If you read carefully, the laws only cover hunting with weapons, he informed me. He watched my face with enjoyment as that slowly sank in. Bears, I repeated with difficulty. Grizzly is Emmett's favorite. His voice was still offhand, but his eyes were scrutinizing my reaction. I tried to pull myself together. Hmm, I said, taking another bite of pizza as an excuse to look down. I chewed slowly and then took a long drink of Coke without looking up. So, I said after a moment, finally meeting his now anxious gaze. What's your favorite? He raised an eyebrow and the corners of his mouth turned down in disapproval. Mountain lion. Ah, I said in a politely disinterested tone, looking for my soda again. Of course, he said, and his tone mirrored mine. We have to be careful not to impact the environment with injudicious hunting. We tried to focus on areas with an overpopulation of predators, ranging as far away as we need. There's always plenty of deer and elk here, and they'll do. But where's the fun in that? He smiled teasingly. Where indeed, I murmured around another bite of pizza. Early spring is Emmett's favorite bear season. They're just coming out of hibernation, so they're more irritable. He smiled at some remembered joke. Nothing more fun than an irritated grizzly bear, I agreed, nodding. He snickered, shaking his head. Tell me what you're really thinking, please. I'm trying to picture it, but I can't, I admitted. How do you hunt a bear without weapons? Oh, we have weapons, he flashed his brilliant teeth in a brief, threatening smile. I fought back a shiver before it could expose me. Just not the kind they consider when writing hunting laws. If you've ever seen a bear attack on television, you should be able to visualize Emmett hunting. I couldn't stop the next shiver that flashed down my spine. I peeked across the cafeteria toward Emmett, grateful that he wasn't looking my way. The thick bands of muscle that wrapped his arms and torso were somehow even more menacing now. Edward followed my gaze and chuckled. I stared at him unnerved. Are you like a bear too? I asked in a low voice. More like the lion, or so they tell me, he said lightly. Perhaps our preferences are indicative. I tried to smile. Perhaps, I repeated. But my mind was filled with opposing images that I couldn't merge together. Is that something I might get to see? Absolutely not. His face turned even whiter than usual, and his eyes were suddenly furious. I leaned back, stunned, and though I'd never admit it to him, frightened by his reaction. He leaned back as well, folding his arms across his chest. Too scary for me? I asked when I could control my voice again. If that were it, I would take you out tonight, he said, his voice cutting. You need a healthy dose of fear. Nothing could be more beneficial for you. Then why? I pressed, trying to ignore his angry expression. He glared at me for a long minute. Later, he finally said. He was on his feet in one lithe movement. We're going to be late. I glanced around, startled to see that he was right and the cafeteria was nearly vacant. When I was with him, the time and the place were such a muddled blur that I completely lost track of both. I jumped up, grabbing my bag from the back of my chair. Later, then, I agreed. I wouldn't forget. Chapter 11. Complications. Everyone watched us as we walked together to our lab table. I noticed that he no longer angled the chair to sit as far from me as the desk would allow. Instead, he sat quite close beside me, our arms almost touching. Mr. Banner backed into the room then. What superb timing the man had, pulling a tall metal frame on wheels that held a heavy-looking, outdated TV and VCR. A movie day. The lift in the class atmosphere was almost tangible. Mr. Banner shoved the tape into the reluctant VCR and walked to the wall to turn off the lights. And then, as the room went black, I was suddenly hyper-aware that Edward was sitting less than an inch from me. I was stunned by the unexpected electricity that flowed through me, amazed that it was possible to be more aware of him than I already was. A crazy impulse to reach over and touch him, to stroke his perfect face just once in the darkness, nearly overwhelmed me. I crossed my arms tightly across my chest, my hands balling into fists. I was losing my mind. The opening credits began, lighting the room by a token amount. My eyes, of their own accord, flickered to him. I smiled sheepishly as I realized his posture was identical to mine, fists clenched under his arms, right down to the eyes, peering sideways at me. He grinned back, his eyes somehow managing to smolder even in the dark. I looked away before I could start hyperventilating. It was absolutely ridiculous that I should feel dizzy. The hour seemed very long. I couldn't concentrate on the movie. I didn't even know what subject it was on. I tried unsuccessfully to relax, but the electric current that seemed to be originating from somewhere in his body never slackened. Occasionally, I would permit myself a quick glance in his direction, but he never seemed to relax either. The overpowering craving to touch him also refused to fade, and I crushed my fist safely against my ribs until my fingers were aching with the effort. I breathed a sigh of relief when Mr. Banner flicked the lights back on at the end of class and stretched my arms out in front of me, flexing my stiff fingers. Edward chuckled beside me. "Well, that was interesting," he murmured. His voice was dark and his eyes were cautious. Was all I was able to respond. "Shall we?" he asked, rising fluidly. I almost groaned. Time for gym. I stood with care, worried my balance might have been affected by the strange new intensity between us. He walked me to my next class in silence and paused at the door. I turned to say goodbye. His face startled me. His expression was torn, almost pained, and so fiercely beautiful that the ache to touch him flared as strong as before. My goodbye stuck in my throat. He raised his hand, hesitant, conflict raging in his eyes, and then swiftly brushed the length of my cheekbone with his fingertips. His skin was as icy as ever, but the trail his fingers left on my skin was alarmingly warm, like I'd been burned, but didn't feel the pain of it yet. He turned without a word and strode quickly away from me. I walked into the gym lightheaded and wobbly. I drifted to the locker room, changing in a trance-like state, only vaguely aware that there were other people surrounding me. Reality didn't fully set in until I was handed a racket. It wasn't heavy, yet it felt very unsafe in my hand. I could see a few of the other kids in class eyeing me furtively. Coach Clapp ordered us to pair up into teams. Mercifully, some vestiges of Mike's chivalry still survived. He came to stand beside me. "Do you want to be a team?" "Thanks, Mike. You don't have to do this, you know," I grimaced apologetically. "Don't worry. I'll keep out of your way," he grinned. Sometimes it was so easy to like Mike. It didn't go smoothly. I somehow managed to hit myself in the head with my racket and clip Mike's shoulder on the same swing. I spent the rest of the hour in the back corner of the court, the racket held safely behind my back. Despite being handicapped by me, Mike was pretty good. He won 3 games out of 4 single-handedly. He gave me an unearned high five when the coach finally blew the whistle ending class. "So," he said as we walked off the court. "So what?" "You and Cullen, huh?" he asked, his tone rebellious. My previous feeling of affection disappeared. "That's none of your business, Mike," I warned, internally cursing Jessica straight to the fiery pits of Hades. "I don't like it," he muttered anyway. "You don't have to," I snapped. "He looks at you like you're something to eat," he continued, ignoring me. I choked back the hysteria that threatened to explode, but a small giggle managed to get out despite my efforts. He glowered at me. I waved and fled to the locker room. I dressed quickly, something stronger than butterflies battering recklessly against the walls of my stomach. My argument with Mike already a distant memory. I was wondering if Edward would be waiting, or if I should meet him at his car. What if his family was there? I felt a wave of real terror. Did they know that I knew? Was I supposed to know that they knew that I knew or not? By the time I walked out of the gym, I had just about decided to walk straight home without even looking toward the parking lot. But my worries were unnecessary. Edward was waiting, leaning casually against the side of the gym, his breathtaking face untroubled now. As I walked to his side, I felt a peculiar sense of release. "Hi," I breathed, smiling hugely. "Hello." His answering smile was brilliant. "How was Jim?" My face fell a tiny bit. "Fine," I lied. "Really?" He was unconvinced. His eyes shifted their focus slightly, looking over my shoulder and narrowing. I glanced behind me to see Mike's back as he walked away. "What?" I demanded. His eyes slid back to mine, still tight. "Newton's getting on my nerves." "You weren't listening again." I was horror-struck. All traces of my sudden good humor vanished. "How's your head?" he asked innocently. "You're unbelievable." I turned, stomping away in the general direction of the parking lot, though I hadn't ruled out walking at this point. He kept up with me easily. "You were the one who mentioned how I'd never seen you in gym. It made me curious." He didn't sound repentant, so I ignored him. We walked in silence, a furious, embarrassed silence on my part, to his car. But I had to stop a few steps away. A crowd of people, all boys, were surrounding it. Then I realized they weren't surrounding the Volvo. They were actually circled around Rosalie's red convertible, unmistakable lust in their eyes. None of them even looked up as Edward slid between them to open his door. I climbed quickly in the passenger side, also unnoticed. "Ostentatious," he muttered. "What kind of car is that?" I asked. "An M3. "I don't speak car and driver." "It's a BMW, he rolled his eyes, not looking at me, trying to back out without running over the car enthusiasts. I nodded. I'd heard of that one. "Are you still angry?" he asked as he carefully maneuvered his way out. "Definitely," he sighed. "Will you forgive me if I apologize?" "Maybe, if you mean it. And if you promise not to do it again," I insisted. His eyes were suddenly shrewd. "How about if I mean it, and I agree to let you drive Saturday?" He countered my conditions. I considered and decided it was probably the best offer I would get. "Deal," I agreed. "Then I'm very sorry I upset you." His eyes burned with sincerity for a protracted moment, playing havoc with the rhythm of my heart, and then turned playful. "And I'll be on your doorstep bright and early Saturday morning." It doesn't help with the Charlie situation if an unexplained Volvo is left in the driveway. His smile was condescending now. I wasn't intending to bring a car. "How..." He cut me off. "Don't worry about it. I'll be there, no car." I let it go. I had a more pressing question. "Is it later yet?" I asked significantly. He frowned. "I suppose it is later." I kept my expression polite as I waited. He stopped the car. I looked up, surprised. Of course we were already at Charlie's house, parked behind the truck. It was easier to ride with him if I only looked when it was over. When I looked back at him, he was staring at me, measuring with his eyes. "And you still want to know why you can't see me hunt?" He seemed solemn, but I thought I saw a trace of humor deep in his eyes. Well, I clarified, I was mostly wondering about your reaction. Did I frighten you? Yes, there was definitely humor there. No, I lied. He didn't buy it. I apologize for scaring you, he persisted with a slight smile. But then all evidence of teasing disappeared. It was just the very thought of you being there while we hunted. His jaw tightened. That would be bad? He spoke from between clenched teeth. Extremely. Because? He took a deep breath and stared through the windshield at the thick, rolling clouds that seemed to press down, almost within reach. When we hunt, he spoke slowly, unwillingly, we give ourselves over to our senses, govern less with our minds, especially our sense of smell. If you were anywhere near me when I lost control that way, he shook his head, still gazing morosely at the heavy clouds. I kept my expression firmly under control, expecting the swift flash of his eyes to judge my reaction that soon followed. My face gave nothing away, but our eyes held, and the silence deepened and changed. Flickers of the electricity I'd felt this afternoon began to charge the atmosphere as he gazed unrelentingly into my eyes. It wasn't until my head started to swim that I realized I wasn't breathing. When I drew in a jagged breath, breaking the stillness, he closed his eyes. Bella, I think you should go inside now. His low voice was rough, his eyes on the clouds again. I opened the door, and the arctic draft that burst into the car helped clear my head. Afraid I might stumble in my woozy state, I stepped carefully out of the car and shut the door behind me without looking back. The whir of the automatic window unrolling made me turn. Oh, Bella, he called after me, his voice more even. He leaned toward the open window with a faint smile on his lips. Yes? Tomorrow, it's my turn. Your turn to what? He smiled wider, flashing his gleaming teeth. Ask the questions. And then he was gone, the car speeding down the street and disappearing around the corner before I could even collect my thoughts. I smiled as I walked to the house. It was clear he was planning to see me tomorrow, if nothing else. That night, Edward starred in my dreams, as usual. However, the climate of my unconsciousness had changed. It thrilled with the same electricity that had charged the afternoon, and I tossed and turned restlessly, waking often. It was only in the early hours of the morning that I finally sank into an exhausted, dreamless sleep. When I woke, I was still tired, but edgy as well. I pulled on my brown turtleneck and the inescapable jeans, sighing as I daydreamed of spaghetti straps and shorts. Breakfast was the usual quiet event I expected. Charlie fried eggs for himself. I had my bowl of cereal. I wondered if he had forgotten about this Saturday. He answered my unspoken question as he stood up to take his plate to the sink. About this Saturday, he began, walking across the kitchen and turning on the faucet. I cringed. Yes, Dad? Are you still set on going to Seattle? He asked. That was the plan. I grimaced, wishing he hadn't brought it up so I wouldn't have to compose careful half-truths. He squeezed some dish soap onto his plate and swirled it around with the brush. And you're sure you can't make it back in time for the dance? I'm not going to the dance, Dad, I glared. Didn't anyone ask you? He asked, trying to hide his concern by focusing on rinsing the plate. I sidestepped the minefield. It's a girl's choice. Oh. He frowned as he dried his plate. I sympathized with him. It must be a hard thing to be a father, living in fear that your daughter would meet a boy she liked, but also having to worry if she didn't. How ghastly it would be, I thought, shuddering, if Charlie had even the slightest inkling of exactly what I did like. Charlie left then, with a goodbye wave, and I went upstairs to brush my teeth and gather my books. When I heard the cruiser pull away, I could only wait a few seconds before I had to peek out of my window. The silver car was already there, waiting in Charlie's spot on the driveway. I bounded down the stairs and out the front door, wondering how long this bizarre routine would continue. I never wanted it to end. He waited in the car, not appearing to watch as I shut the door behind me without bothering to lock the deadbolt. I walked to the car, pausing shyly before opening the door and stepping in. He was smiling, relaxed, and as usual, perfect and beautiful to an excruciating degree. "Good morning." His voice was silky. "How are you today?" His eyes roamed over my face, as if his question was something more than simple courtesy. "Good, thank you." I was always good, much more than good, when I was near him. His gaze lingered on the circles under my eyes. "You look tired." "I couldn't sleep," I confessed, automatically swinging my hair around my shoulder to provide some measure of cover. "Neither could I," he teased as he started the engine. I was becoming used to the quiet purr. I was sure the roar of my truck would scare me whenever I got to drive it again. I laughed. "I guess that's right. I suppose I slept just a little bit more than you did." "I'd wager you did." "So what did you do last night?" I asked. He chuckled. "Not a chance. It's my day to ask questions." "Oh, that's right. What do you want to know?" My forehead creased. I couldn't imagine anything about me that could be in any way interesting to him. "What's your favorite color?" he asked, his face grave. I rolled my eyes. "It changes from day to day." "What's your favorite color today?" He was still solemn. "Probably brown. I tended to dress according to my mood." He snorted, dropping his serious expression. "Brown?" he asked skeptically. "Sure. Brown is warm. I miss brown. Everything that's supposed to be brown, tree trunks, rocks, dirt, is all covered up with squashy green stuff here," I complained. He seemed fascinated by my little rant. He considered for a moment, staring into my eyes. "You're right," he decided, serious again. "Brown is warm." He reached over swiftly, but somehow still hesitantly, to sweep my hair back behind my shoulder. We were at the school by now. He turned back to me as he pulled into a parking space. "What music is in your CD player right now?" he asked, his face as somber as if he'd asked for a murder confession. I realized I'd never removed the CD Phil had given me. When I said the name of the band, he smiled crookedly, a peculiar expression in his eyes. He flipped open a compartment under his car's CD player, pulled out one of 30 or so CDs that were jammed into the small space, and handed it to me. "Debussy to this?" he raised an eyebrow. It was the same CD. I examined the familiar cover art, keeping my eyes down. It continued like that for the rest of the day, while he walked me to English, when he met me after Spanish, all through the lunch hour. He questioned me relentlessly about every insignificant detail of my existence. Movies I'd liked and hated, the few places I'd been, and the many places I wanted to go, and books. Endlessly books. I couldn't remember the last time I'd talked so much. More often than not, I felt self-conscious, certain I must be boring him. But the absolute absorption of his face and his never-ending stream of questions compelled me to continue. Mostly his questions were easy, only a very few triggering my easy blushes. But when I did flush, it brought on a whole new round of questions. Such as the time he asked my favorite gemstone, and I blurted out topaz before thinking. He'd been flinging questions at me with such speed that I felt like I was taking one of those psychiatric tests where you answer with the first word that comes to mind. I was sure he would have continued down whatever mental list he was following, except for the blush. My face reddened because, until very recently, my favorite gemstone was garnet. It was impossible, while staring back into his topaz eyes, not to remember the reason for the switch. And, naturally, he wouldn't rest until I'd admitted why I was embarrassed. "Tell me," he finally commanded after persuasion failed. Failed only because I kept my eyes safely away from his face. "It's the color of your eyes today," I sighed, surrendering, staring down at my hands as I fiddled with a piece of my hair. "I suppose if you asked me in 2 weeks, I'd say onyx." I'd given more information than necessary in my unwilling honesty, and I worried it would provoke the strange anger that flared whenever I slipped and revealed too clearly how obsessed I was. But his pause was very short. "What kind of flowers do you prefer?" he fired off. I sighed in relief and continued with the psychoanalysis. Biology was a complication again. Edward had continued with his quizzing up until Mr. Banner entered the room, dragging the audiovisual frame again. As the teacher approached the light switch, I noticed Edward slide his chair slightly farther away from mine. It didn't help. As soon as the room was dark, there was the same electric spark, the same restless craving to stretch my hand across the short space and touch his cold skin, as yesterday. I leaned forward on the table, resting my chin on my folded arms, my hidden fingers gripping the table's edge as I fought to ignore the irrational longing that unsettled me. I didn't look at him, afraid that if he was looking at me, it would only make self-control that much harder. I sincerely tried to watch the movie, but at the end of the hour, I had no idea what I'd just seen. I sighed in relief again when Mr. Banner turned the lights on, finally glancing at Edward. He was looking at me, his eyes ambivalent. He rose in silence and then stood still, waiting for me. We walked toward the gym in silence, like yesterday. And also like yesterday, he touched my face wordlessly, this time with the back of his cool hand, stroking once from my temple to my jaw, before he turned and walked away. Jim passed quickly as I watched Mike's one-man badminton show. He didn't speak to me today, either in response to my vacant expression or because he was still angry about our squabble yesterday. Somewhere in a corner of my mind, I felt bad about that, but I couldn't concentrate on him. I hurried to change afterward, ill at ease, knowing the faster I moved, the sooner I would be with Edward. The pressure made me more clumsy than usual, but eventually I made it out the door, feeling the same release when I saw him standing there, a wide smile automatically spreading across my face. He smiled in reaction before launching into more cross-examination. His questions were different now, though, not as easily answered. He wanted to know what I missed about home, insisting on descriptions of anything he wasn't familiar with. We sat in front of Charlie's house for hours as the sky darkened and rain plummeted around us in a sudden deluge. I tried to describe impossible things, like the scent of creosote, bitter, slightly resinous, but still pleasant, the high keening sound of the cicadas in July, the feathery barrenness of the trees, the very size of the sky, extending white-blue from horizon to horizon, barely interrupted by the low mountains covered with purple volcanic rock. The hardest thing to explain was why it was so beautiful to me. To justify a beauty that didn't depend on the sparse, spiny vegetation that often looked half-dead. A beauty that had more to do with the exposed shape of the land, with the shallow bowls of valleys between the craggy hills, and the way they held on to the sun. I found myself using my hands as I tried to describe it to him. His quiet, probing questions kept me talking freely, forgetting, in the dim light of the storm, to be embarrassed for monopolizing the conversation. Finally, when I had finished detailing my cluttered room at home, he paused instead of responding with another question. "Are you finished?" I asked in relief. "Not even close, but your father will be home soon." "Charlie!" I suddenly recalled his existence and sighed. I looked out at the rain-darkened sky, but it gave nothing away. "How late is it?" I wondered out loud as I glanced at the clock. I was surprised by the time. Charlie would be driving home now. "It's twilight," Edward murmured, looking at the western horizon, obscured as it was with clouds. His voice was thoughtful, as if his mind were somewhere far away. I stared at him as he gazed unseeingly out the windshield. I was still staring when his eyes suddenly shifted back to mine. "It's the safest time of day for us," he said, answering the unspoken question in my eyes. "The easiest time, but also the saddest, in a way. The end of another day. The return of the night. Darkness is so predictable, don't you think?" He smiled wistfully. "I like the night. Without the dark, we'd never see the stars. I frowned. Not that you see them here much. He laughed, and the mood abruptly lightened. Charlie will be here in a few minutes. So, unless you want to tell him that you'll be with me Saturday, he raised one eyebrow. Thanks, but no thanks. I gathered my books, realizing I was stiff from sitting still so long. So is it my turn tomorrow, then? Certainly not. His face was teasingly outraged. I told you I wasn't done, didn't I? What more is there? You'll find out tomorrow. He reached across to open my door for me, and his sudden proximity sent my heart into frenzied palpitations. But his hand froze on the handle. Not good, he muttered. What is it? I was surprised to see that his jaw was clenched, his eyes disturbed. He glanced at me for a brief second. Another complication, he said glumly. He flung the door open in one swift movement and then moved, almost cringed, swiftly away from me. The flash of headlights through the rain caught my attention as a dark car pulled up to the curb just a few feet away, facing us. Charlie's around the corner, he warned, staring through the downpour at the other vehicle. I hopped out at once, despite my confusion and curiosity. The rain was louder as it glanced off my jacket. I tried to make out the shapes in the front seat of the other car, but it was too dark. I could see Edward illuminated in the glare of the new car's headlights. He was still staring ahead, his gaze locked on something or someone I couldn't see. His expression was a strange mix of frustration and defiance. Then he revved the engine, and the tires squealed against the wet pavement. The Volvo was out of sight in seconds. "Hey, Bella!" called a familiar husky voice from the driver's side of the little black car. "Jacob?" I asked, squinting through the rain. Just then, Charlie's cruiser swung around the corner, his light shining on the occupants of the car in front of me. Jacob was already climbing out, his wide grin visible even through the darkness. In the passenger seat was a much older man, a heavy-set man with a memorable face, a face that overflowed, the cheeks resting against his shoulders, with creases running through the russet skin like an old leather jacket. And the surprisingly familiar eyes, black eyes that seemed at the same time both too young and too ancient for the broad face they were set in. Jacob's father, Billy Black. I knew him immediately. Though in the more than 5 years since I'd seen him last, I'd managed to forget his name when Charlie had spoken of him my first day here. He was staring at me, scrutinizing my face, so I smiled tentatively at him. His eyes were wide, as if in shock or fear. His nostrils flared. My smile faded. Another complication, Edward had said. Billy still stared at me with intense, anxious eyes. I groaned internally. Had Billy recognized Edward so easily? Could he really believe the impossible legends his son had scoffed at? The answer was clear in Billy's eyes. Yes. Yes, he could. Chapter 12. Balancing. Billy, Charlie called as soon as he got out of the car. I turned toward the house, beckoning to Jacob as I ducked under the porch. I heard Charlie greeting them loudly behind me. I'm going to pretend I didn't see you behind the wheel, Jake, he said disapprovingly. We get permits early on the res, Jacob said while I unlocked the door and flicked on the porch light. Sure you do, Charlie laughed. I have to get around somehow. I recognized Billy's resonant voice easily, despite the years. The sound of it made me feel suddenly younger, a child. I went inside, leaving the door open behind me, and turning on lights before I hung up my jacket. Then I stood in the door, watching anxiously as Charlie and Jacob helped Billy out of the car and into his wheelchair. I backed out of the way as the three of them hurried in, shaking off the rain. This is a surprise, Charlie was saying. It's been too long, Billy answered. I hope it's not a bad time. His dark eyes flashed up to me again, their expression unreadable. No, it's great. I hope you can stay for the game. Jacob grinned. I think that's the plan. Our TV broke last week. Billy made a face at his son. And of course Jacob was anxious to see Bella again, he added, Jacob scowled and ducked his head while I fought back a surge of remorse. Maybe I'd been too convincing on the beach. "Are you hungry?" I asked, turning toward the kitchen. I was eager to escape Billy's searching gaze. "Nah, we ate just before we came," Jacob answered. "How about you, Charlie?" I called over my shoulder as I fled around the corner. "Sure," he replied, his voice moving in the direction of the front room and the TV. I could hear Billy's chair follow. The grilled cheese sandwiches were in the frying pan, and I was slicing up a tomato when I sensed someone behind me. "So, how are things?" Jacob asked. "Pretty good," I smiled. His enthusiasm was hard to resist. "How about you? Did you finish your car?" "No," he frowned. "I still need parts. We borrowed that one." He pointed with his thumb in the direction of the front yard. "Sorry. I haven't seen any... What was it you were looking for?" "Master cylinder," he grinned. "Is something wrong with the truck?" he added suddenly. "No." "Oh, I just wondered because you weren't driving it." I stared down at the pan, pulling up the edge of a sandwich to check the bottom side. "I got a ride with a friend." "Nice ride," Jacob's voice was admiring. "I didn't recognize the driver, though. I thought I knew most of the kids around here." I nodded noncommittally, keeping my eyes down as I flipped sandwiches. "My dad seemed to know him from somewhere. Jacob, could you hand me some plates? They're in the cupboard over the sink." "Sure." He got the plates in silence. I hoped he would let it drop now. "So, who was it?" he asked, setting two plates on the counter next to me. I sighed in defeat. "Edward Cullen." To my surprise, he laughed. I glanced up at him. He looked a little embarrassed. "Guess that explains it then," he said. "I wondered why my dad was acting so strange." "That's right." I faked an innocent expression. "He doesn't like the Cullens." "Superstitious old man," Jacob muttered under his breath. "You don't think he'd say anything to Charlie?" I couldn't help asking, the words coming out in a low rush. Jacob stared at me for a moment, and I couldn't read the expression in his dark eyes. "I doubt it," he finally answered. "I think Charlie chewed him out pretty good last time. They haven't spoken much since. Tonight is sort of a reunion, I think. I don't think he'd bring it up again." "Oh," I said, trying to sound indifferent. I stayed in the front room after I carried the food out to Charlie, pretending to watch the game while Jacob chattered at me. I was really listening to the men's conversation, watching for any sign that Billy was about to rat me out, trying to think of ways to stop him if he began. It was a long night. I had a lot of homework that was going undone, but I was afraid to leave Billy alone with Charlie. Finally, the game ended. "Are you and your friends coming back to the beach soon?" Jacob asked as he pushed his father over the lip of the threshold. "I'm not sure," I hedged. "That was fun, Charlie," Billy said. "Come up for the next game," Charlie encouraged. "Sure, sure," Billy said. "We'll be here. Have a good night." His eyes shifted to mine, and his smile disappeared. "You take care, Bella," he added seriously. "Thanks," I muttered, looking away. I headed for the stairs while Charlie waved from the doorway. "Wait, Bella," he said. I cringed. Had Billy gotten something in before I joined them in the living room? But Charlie was relaxed, still grinning from the unexpected visit. "I didn't get a chance to talk to you tonight. How was your day?" "Good," I hesitated with one foot on the first stair, searching for details I could safely share. "My badminton team won all four games." "Wow, I didn't know you could play badminton." "Well, actually I can't, but my partner is really good," I admitted. "Who is it?" he asked with token interest. "Mike Newton," I told him reluctantly. "Oh yeah, you said you were friends with the Newton kid." He perked up. "Nice family," he mused for a minute. "Why didn't you ask him to the dance this weekend?" "Dad," I groaned. "He's kind of dating my friend Jessica. Besides, you know I can't dance." "Oh yeah," he muttered, and he smiled at me apologetically. "So I guess it's good you'll be gone Saturday. I've made plans to go fishing with the guys from the station, The weather's supposed to be real warm. But if you wanted to put your trip off till someone could go with you, I'd stay home. I know I leave you here alone too much. Dad, you're doing a great job, I smiled, hoping my relief didn't show. I've never minded being alone. I'm too much like you. I winked at him, and he smiled his crinkly-eyed smile. I slept better that night, too tired to dream again. When I woke to the pearl-gray morning, my mood was blissful. The tense evening with Billy and Jacob seemed harmless enough now. I decided to forget it completely. I caught myself whistling while I was pulling the front part of my hair back into a barrette, and later again as I skipped down the stairs. Charlie noticed. "You're cheerful this morning," he commented over breakfast. I shrugged. "It's Friday." I hurried so I would be ready to go the second Charlie left. I had my bag ready, shoes on, teeth brushed, but even though I rushed to the door, as soon as I was sure Charlie would be out of sight, Edward was faster. He was waiting in his shiny car, windows down, engine off. I didn't hesitate this time, climbing in the passenger side quickly, the sooner to see his face. He grinned his crooked smile at me, stopping my breath and my heart. I couldn't imagine how an angel could be any more glorious. There was nothing about him that could be improved upon. "How did you sleep?" he asked. I wondered if he had any idea how appealing his voice was. "Fine. How was your night?" "Pleasant." His smile was amused. I felt like I was missing an inside joke. "Can I ask what you did?" I asked. "No," he grinned. "Today is still mine." He wanted to know about people today. More about Renee, her hobbies, what we'd done in our free time together. And then the one grandmother I'd known, my few school friends, embarrassing me when he asked about boys I dated. I was relieved that I'd never really dated anyone, so that particular conversation couldn't last long. He seemed as surprised as Jessica and Angela by my lack of romantic history. "So you never met anyone you wanted?" he asked in a serious tone that made me wonder what he was thinking about. I was grudgingly honest. "Not in Phoenix." His lips pressed together into a hard line. We were in the cafeteria at this point. The day had sped by in the blur that was rapidly becoming routine. I took advantage of his brief pause to take a bite of my bagel. "I should have let you drive yourself today," he announced apropos of nothing while I chewed. "Why?" I demanded. "I'm leaving with Alice after lunch." "Oh," I blinked, bewildered and disappointed. "That's okay. It's not that far of a walk." He frowned at me impatiently. "I'm not going to make you walk home. We'll go get your truck and leave it here for you." "I don't have my key with me," I sighed. "I really don't mind walking." What I minded was losing my time with him. He shook his head. "Your truck will be here, and the key will be in the ignition, unless you're afraid someone might steal it." He laughed at the thought. "All right," I agreed, pursing my lips. I was pretty sure my key was in the pocket of a pair of jeans I wore Wednesday, under a pile of clothes in the laundry room. Even if he broke into my house, or whatever he was planning, he'd never find it. He seemed to feel the challenge in my consent. He smirked, overconfident. "So, where are you going?" I asked as casually as I could manage. "Hunting," he answered grimly. "If I'm going to be alone with you tomorrow, I'm going to take whatever precautions I can." His face grew morose and pleading. "You can always cancel, you know." I looked down, afraid of the persuasive power of his eyes. I refused to be convinced to fear him, no matter how real the danger might be. "It doesn't matter," I repeated in my head. "No," I whispered, glancing back at his face. "I can't." "Perhaps you're right," he murmured bleakly. His eyes seemed to darken in color as I watched. I changed the subject. "What time will I see you tomorrow?" I asked, already depressed by the thought of him leaving now. "That depends. It's a Saturday. Don't you want to sleep in?" he offered. "No," I answered too fast. He restrained a smile. "The same time as usual, then," he decided. "Will Charlie be there?" "No," He's fishing tomorrow. I beamed at the memory of how conveniently things had worked out. His voice turned sharp. And if you don't come home, what will he think? I have no idea, I answered coolly. He knows I've been meaning to do the laundry. Maybe he'll think I fell in the washer. He scowled at me and I scowled back. His anger was much more impressive than mine. What are you hunting tonight? I asked when I was sure I had lost the glowering contest. Whatever we find in the park. We aren't going far. He seemed bemused by my casual reference to his secret realities. Why are you going with Alice? I wondered. Alice is the most supportive. He frowned as he spoke. And the others? I asked timidly. What are they? His brow puckered for a moment. Incredulous, for the most part. I peeked quickly behind me at his family. They sat staring off in different directions, exactly the same as the first time I'd seen them. Only now they were four. Their beautiful, bronze-haired brother sat across from me, his golden eyes troubled. They don't like me, I guessed. That's not it, he disagreed. But his eyes were too innocent. They don't understand why I can't leave you alone. I grimaced. Neither do I, for that matter. Edward shook his head slowly, rolling his eyes toward the ceiling before he met my gaze again. I told you, you don't see yourself clearly at all. You're not like anyone I've ever known. You fascinate me. I glared at him, sure he was teasing now. He smiled as he deciphered my expression. Having the advantages I do, he murmured, touching his forehead discreetly. I have a better than average grasp of human nature. People are predictable. But you never do what I expect. You always take me by surprise. I looked away, my eyes wandering back to his family, embarrassed and dissatisfied. His words made me feel like a science experiment. I wanted to laugh at myself for expecting anything else. That part is easy enough to explain, he continued. I felt his eyes on my face, but I couldn't look at him yet, afraid he might read the chagrin in my eyes. But there's more, and it's not so easy to put into words. I was still staring at the Cullens while he spoke. Suddenly, Rosalie, his blonde and breathtaking sister, turned to look at me. No, not to look, to glare, with dark, cold eyes. I wanted to look away, but her gaze held me until Edward broke off mid-sentence and made an angry noise under his breath. It was almost a hiss. Rosalie turned her head, and I was relieved to be free. I looked back at Edward, and I knew he could see the confusion and fear that widened my eyes. His face was tight as he explained. I'm sorry about that. She's just worried. You see, it's dangerous for more than just me if, after spending so much time with you so publicly, he looked down. If this ends badly. He dropped his head into his hands, as he had that night in Port Angeles. His anguish was plain. I yearned to comfort him, but I was at a loss to know how. My hand reached toward him involuntarily. Quickly, though, I dropped it to the table, fearing that my touch would only make things worse. I realized slowly that his words should frighten me. I waited for that fear to come, but all I could seem to feel was an ache for his pain. And frustration. Frustration that Rosalie had interrupted whatever he was about to say. I didn't know how to bring it up again. He still had his head in his hands. I tried to speak in a normal voice. And you have to leave now? Yes. He raised his face. It was serious for a moment. And then his mood shifted and he smiled. It's probably for the best. We still have 15 minutes of that wretched movie left to endure in biology. I don't think I could take any more. I started. Alice, her short inky hair and a halo of spiky disarray around her exquisite elfin face, was suddenly standing behind his shoulder. Her slight frame was willowy, graceful, even in absolute stillness. He greeted her without looking away from me. Alice? Edward, she answered, her high soprano voice almost as attractive as his. Alice, Bella. Bella, Alice, he introduced us, gesturing casually with his hand, a wry smile on his face. Hello, Bella, Her brilliant obsidian eyes were unreadable, but her smile was friendly. It's nice to finally meet you. Edward flashed a dark look at her. Hi, Alice, I murmured shyly. Are you ready? She asked him. His voice was aloof. Nearly. I'll meet you at the car. She left without another word. Her walk was so fluid, so sinuous that I felt a sharp pang of jealousy. Should I say, have fun? Or is that the wrong sentiment? I asked, turning back to him. No, have fun works as well as anything, he grinned. Have fun, then. I worked to sound wholehearted. Of course I didn't fool him. I'll try. He still grinned. And you try to be safe, please. Safe in Forks. What a challenge. For you it is a challenge, his jaw hardened. Promise. I promise to try and be safe, I recited. I'll do the laundry tonight. That ought to be fraught with peril. Don't fall in, he mocked. I'll do my best. He stood then, and I rose too. I'll see you tomorrow, I sighed. It seems like a long time to you, doesn't it? He mused. I nodded glumly. I'll be there in the morning, he promised, smiling his crooked smile. He reached across the table to touch my face, lightly brushing along my cheekbone again. Then he turned and walked away. I stared after him until he was gone. I was sorely tempted to ditch the rest of the day. At the very least, Jim, but a warning instinct stopped me. I knew that if I disappeared now, Mike and others would assume I was with Edward. And Edward was worried about the time we'd spent together publicly, if things went wrong. I refused to dwell on the last thought, concentrating instead on making things safer for him. I intuitively knew, and sensed he did too, that tomorrow would be pivotal. Our relationship couldn't continue to balance as it did on the point of a knife. We would fall off one edge or the other, depending entirely upon his decision or his instincts. My decision was made. Made before I'd ever consciously chosen, and I was committed to seeing it through. Because there was nothing more terrifying to me, more excruciating, than the thought of turning away from him. It was an impossibility. I went to class feeling dutiful. I couldn't honestly say what happened in biology. My mind was too preoccupied with thoughts of tomorrow. In gym, Mike was speaking to me again. He wished me a good time in Seattle. I carefully explained that I'd canceled my trip, worried about my truck. Are you going to the dance with Cullen? He asked, suddenly sulky. No, I'm not going to the dance at all. What are you doing then? He asked, too interested. My natural urge was to tell him to butt out. Instead, I lied brightly. Laundry? And then I have to study for the trig test, or I'm going to fail. Is Cullen helping you study? Edward, I emphasized, is not going to help me study. He's gone away somewhere for the weekend. The lies came more naturally than usual, I noted with surprise. Oh, he perked up. You know, you could come to the dance with our group anyway. That would be cool. We'd all dance with you, he promised. The mental image of Jessica's face made my tone sharper than necessary. I'm not going to the dance, Mike, okay? Fine. He sulked again. I was just offering. When the school day had finally ended, I walked to the parking lot without enthusiasm. I did not especially want to walk home, but I couldn't see how he would have retrieved my truck. Then again, I was starting to believe that nothing was impossible for him. The latter instinct proved correct. My truck sat in the same space he'd parked his Volvo in this morning. I shook my head, incredulous, as I opened the unlocked door and saw the key in the ignition. There was a piece of white paper folded on my seat. I got in and closed the door before I unfolded it. Two words were written in his elegant script. Be safe. The sound of the truck roaring to life frightened me. I laughed at myself. When I got home, the handle of the door was locked, the deadbolt unlocked, just as I'd left it this morning. Inside, I went straight to the laundry room. It looked just the same as I'd left it, too. I dug for my jeans, and after finding them, checked the pockets. Empty. Maybe I'd hung my key up after all, I thought, shaking my head. Following the same instinct that had prompted me to lie to Mike, I called Jessica on the pretense of wishing her luck at the dance. When she offered the same wish for my day with Edward, I told her about the cancellation. She was more disappointed than really necessary for a third-party observer to be. I said goodbye quickly after that. Charlie was absent-minded at dinner, worried over something at work, I guessed, or maybe a basketball game, or maybe he was just really enjoying the lasagna. It was hard to tell with Charlie. "You know, Dad," I began, breaking into his reverie. "What's that, Belle?" "I think you're right about Seattle. I think I'll wait until Jessica or someone else can go with me." "Oh," he said, surprised. "Oh, okay. So do you want me to stay home?" "No, Dad, don't change your plans. I've got a million things to do. Homework, laundry, I need to go to the library and the grocery store. I'll be in and out all day. You go and have fun."
"Are you sure?"
"Absolutely, Dad. Besides, the freezer is getting dangerously low on fish. We're down to a 2, maybe 3-year supply." "You're sure easy to live with, Bella," he smiled.
"I could say the same thing about you," I said, laughing.
The sound of my laughter was off, but he didn't seem to notice. I felt so guilty for deceiving him that I almost took Edward's advice and told him where I would be. Almost. After dinner, I folded clothes and moved another load through the dryer. Unfortunately, it was the kind of job that only keeps hands busy. My mind definitely had too much free time, and it was getting out of control. I fluctuated between anticipation so intense that it was very nearly pain, and an insidious fear that picked at my resolve. I had to keep reminding myself that I'd made my choice and I wasn't going back on it. I pulled his note out of my pocket much more often than necessary to absorb the 2 small words he'd written. "He wants me to be safe," I told myself again and again. I would just hold on to the faith that, in the end, that desire would win out over the others. And what was my other choice? To cut him out of my life? Intolerable. Besides, since I'd come to Forks, it really seemed like my life was about him. But a tiny voice in the back of my mind worried, wondering if it would hurt very much if it ended badly. I was relieved when it was late enough to be acceptable for bedtime. I knew I was far too stressed to sleep, so I did something I'd never done before. I deliberately took unnecessary cold medicine, the kind that knocked me out for a good 8 hours. I normally wouldn't condone that type of behavior in myself, but tomorrow would be complicated enough without me being loopy from sleep deprivation on top of everything else. While I waited for the drugs to kick in, I dried my clean hair till it was impeccably straight and fussed over what I would wear tomorrow. With everything ready for the morning, I finally lay in my bed. I felt hyper. I couldn't stop twitching. I got up and rifled through my shoebox of CDs until I found a collection of Chopin's nocturnes. I put that on very quietly and then lay down again, concentrating on relaxing individual parts of my body. Somewhere in the middle of that exercise, the cold pills took effect, and I gladly sank into unconsciousness. I woke early, having slept soundly and dreamlessly thanks to my gratuitous drug use. Though I was well rested, I slipped right back into the same hectic frenzy from the night before. I dressed in a rush, smoothing my collar against my neck, fidgeting with the tan sweater till it hung right over my jeans. I sneaked a swift look out the window to see that Charlie was already gone. A thin, cottony layer of clouds veiled the sky. They didn't look very lasting. I ate breakfast without tasting the food, hurrying to clean up when I was done. I peeked out the window again, but nothing had changed. I had just finished brushing my teeth and was heading back downstairs when a quiet knock sent my heart thudding against my ribcage. I flew to the door. I had a little trouble with the simple deadbolt, but I yanked the door open at last, and there he was. All the agitation dissolved as soon as I looked at his face, calm taking its place. I breathed a sigh of relief. Yesterday's fear seemed very foolish with him here. He wasn't smiling at first. His face was somber, but then his expression lightened as he looked me over and he laughed. "Good morning," he chuckled. "What's wrong?" I glanced down to make sure I hadn't forgotten anything important,
like shoes or pants.
We match, he laughed again.
I realized he had a long, light tan sweater on, with a white collar showing underneath and blue jeans. I laughed with him, hiding a secret twinge of regret. Why did he have to look like a runway model when I couldn't?
I locked the door behind me while he walked to the truck. He waited by the passenger door with a martyred expression that was easy to understand.
We made a deal, I reminded him smugly, climbing into the driver's seat and reaching over to unlock his door.
Where to? I asked.
Put your seatbelt on. I'm nervous already.
I gave him a dirty look as I complied.
Where to? I repeated with a sigh.
Take the 101 north, he ordered. It was surprisingly difficult to concentrate on the road while feeling his gaze on my face. I compensated by driving more carefully than usual through the still sleeping town.
Were you planning to make it out of Forks before nightfall?
This truck is old enough to be your car's grandfather. Have some respect, I retorted. We were soon out of the town limits, despite his negativity. Thick underbrush and green swathed trunks replaced the lawns and houses.
Turn right on the 110, he instructed, just as I was about to ask. I obeyed silently.
Now we drive until the pavement ends. I could hear a smile in his voice, but I was too afraid of driving off the road and proving him right to look over and be sure.
And what's there at the pavement's end? I wondered.
A trail.
We're hiking?
Thank goodness I'd worn tennis shoes.
Is that a problem?
He sounded as if he'd expected as much.
No.
I tried to make the lie sound confident. But if he thought my truck was slow...
Don't worry, it's only 5 miles or so, and we're in no hurry.
5 miles? I didn't answer so that he wouldn't hear my voice crack in panic. 5 miles of treacherous roots and loose stones, trying to twist my ankles or otherwise incapacitate me? This was going to be humiliating.
We drove in silence for a while as I contemplated the coming horror.
What are you thinking? He asked impatiently after a few moments.
I lied again.
Just wondering where we're going.
It's a place I like to go when the weather is nice.
We both glanced out the windows at the thinning clouds after he spoke.
Charlie said it would be warm today.
And did you tell Charlie what you were up to? He asked.
Nope.
But Jessica thinks we're going to Seattle together?
He seemed cheered by the idea.
No. I told her you canceled on me, which is true.
No one knows you're with me,
angrily now.
That depends. I assume you told Alice.
That's very helpful, Bella, he snapped. I pretended I didn't hear that.
Are you so depressed by Forks that it's made you suicidal? He demanded when I ignored him.
You said it might cause trouble for you, us being together publicly, I reminded him.
So you're worried about the trouble it might cause me if you don't come home? His voice was still angry and bitingly sarcastic.
I nodded, keeping my eyes on the road.
He muttered something under his breath, speaking so quickly that I couldn't understand.
We were silent for the rest of the drive. I could feel the waves of infuriated disapproval rolling off of him. I could think of nothing to say.
And then the road ended, constricting to a thin foot trail with a small wooden marker.
I parked on the narrow shoulder and stepped out, afraid because he was angry with me, and I didn't have driving as an excuse not to look at him.
It was warm now, warmer than it had been in Forks since the day I'd arrived, almost muggy under the clouds.
I pulled off my sweater and knotted it around my waist, glad that I'd worn the light sleeveless shirt, especially if I had 5 miles of hiking ahead of me. I heard his door slam, and looked over to see that he'd removed his sweater, too. He was facing away from me, into the unbroken forest beside my truck.
This way, he said, glancing over his shoulder at me, eyes still annoyed.